6:30.
Good morning. This is Dr. Ivan Wilson of the Dr. Ivan Show. I am a clinician with over 20 years of clinical experience. I help people work through many types of relationship and adjustment related issues. I'm here to help you better manage the needs of your aging parents and help you help yourself in the process. You must have the courage to discuss difficult issues with your parents or spouse when their needs can no longer be best met in the preferred environment of your own home. Choosing residential, independent, assisted living, or nursing facilities for your loved one does not constitute rejection or abandonment. Rather, it can truly be life-enhancing. Approximately 8 months ago, my brother and I traveled to Colorado to visit our aunt, an 85-year-old uncle, the latter of whom we're told was rapidly declining, both medically and cognitively. My mother, his sister, had an often recited saying throughout my childhood, which rang through with regard to the situation. She had said, "Funerals are for the living." And by that I presume she has meant, if you want to be present for someone, show up for them in life. For if you wait until they die to show your respects, it will be too late. So my brother and I had prepared for the worst. It was to be a two-day trip because we were only told that he had a host of medical conditions and dementia, which had worsened substantially of late. We were instructed to purchase travel insurance in the event that he was not able to make it until the time of our scheduled visit. We were also informed that our aunt had lost a lot of weight and had become quite frail herself due to the stress of being my uncle's 24/7 caregiver. So we arrived early one Sunday morning, drove to the townhouse that he and my aunt had rented in a Denver suburb. And we were greeted by my aunt, her daughter, and son-in-law, as my uncle had been up a little earlier in the morning and had to return to his hospital bed, which was located in the dining room, as he was no longer strong enough to make the trip upstairs to their bedrooms. The other problems with the layout of this townhouse had been that the bathtub and shower was on the second floor, and it was a very steep stairway, which was far beyond his capability of navigating. So this required my aunt to have to add bed baths to her ever-growing list of caretaking responsibilities for my uncle. So while he rested, we visited with the others, who shared stories of his drastic decline. My cousin's husband reported that he came over several days earlier to watch my uncle in order to give my aunt a chance to run some errands, perhaps play a round of golf with some girlfriends, and just get out of the house and away from the stress of watching her loving husband of 62 years decline and struggle. While there for approximately 8 hours, we were told our uncle was only awake and able to interact for about a total of 40 minutes just the day before. He hadn't had the strength or endurance to speak or even stay awake for much longer than 10 or 15 minutes at a time. We were told that this substantial decline had all occurred over the past 3 months. It was alarming to hear that this was what became of this vibrant man. For as long as I can remember, my Uncle Jerry had always, quite literally, been the life of the party. Though he will be the first to admit that he never made much money, He had always felt like my rich uncle, as he was exceedingly generous and always the one to expose my brothers and I to things we had no other access to, such as a ride on his boat or a ride in his Cadillac with cruise control at the time when that was truly a novel option. He had been severely injured while in the military and nearly needed his leg to be amputated. However, his mother refused to authorize the doctors to proceed with that medically indicated procedure of amputation. And so they put him back together the best they possibly could, and he persevered. In fact, he even excelled to overcome this challenge. One funny story is, despite his damaged leg being substantially shorter than his other leg, he had worked diligently to become a dance instructor, as he wanted so desperately to overcome this disability. And he felt this was the best way to prove that he would not be beaten. This is just one of many examples of his spirit of perseverance. The family joke had always been that he must be part feline, having 9 lives, or like the Energizer Bunny who keeps going and going, despite setbacks that would have defeated almost anyone else we knew, he would not be beaten. So you can understand my shock in learning that this man who epitomized the word resilience could possibly have declined to a condition of frailty which would prevent him from even remaining awake long enough to interact with loved ones in a meaningful way, especially since he too had been a psychologist whose greatest pleasure over the years had been interacting with and helping others. A last time had come. My uncle had awoken. He would need some assistance in getting out of bed, and then we would finally be able to connect with our well-loved uncle, even if it were to only be for a few short minutes. As he was wheeled in his wheelchair, the 1 to 2 feet in distance from his bed in the dining room to the dining room table where we were to visit, I could plainly see that he was painfully thin and was additionally aided by a large hip brace. My brother and I warmly greeted my uncle, and what transpired next was nothing less than amazing. We sat at the table to lunch and proceeded to have no less than a 3-hour conversation with my uncle. And it was a very meaningful exchange. He then needed a rest, so we left for a couple hours to give him some quiet time and returned with dinner for another meaningful marathon of interaction. We were told by my cousins that it was nothing less than miraculous to see the extent to which he rallied for this visit. She further stated that she was aware that they must look to be somewhat delusional in painting the picture so vividly of a man who was practically on his deathbed just the day before. To see him be so capable of interacting for that long and at that level. As we said our goodbyes later that evening, I'd asked my uncle to let me know if he was strong enough and interested in another day of visit the next day, assuring him that there would be no upset or hurt feelings if he weren't capable of this. He replied that he would love it if we returned, and yet again the following day was equally amazing. It was hard to say goodbye in that one never knows in life whether or not there will be another opportunity to connect again at a later time. However, the visit was far more enjoyable than any of us could have ever expected. I'd come to learn that the very next day my uncle had suffered another major setback as his hip joint popped out of its socket. Once again, he subsequently needed to be assessed for his ability to withstand surgery. Sadly, this amazing visit proved to be the last time that I would have the opportunity and privilege of being with him. these are the sorts of things that really make a huge impression on you, and these are things that we need to be prepared for. When we return, I want to speak with you about how to help yourself through these processes and help your loved ones in making the most responsible decisions that are called for at the time under the circumstances. This is a gift, and it's a gift that we need to be prepared for. Please stay tuned. We'll be back in a few. You're listening to the Dr. Ivan Show.
Evan O.
This is Dr. Ivan of the Dr. Ivan Show. I'm here to help you better manage the needs of your aging parents and help you help yourself in the process. We're talking today about having the courage to discuss the difficult issues with your parents or spouse when their needs can no longer be met in your preferred environment of your own home. And when needed, choosing residential, independent, assisted living, or nursing care for your loved one does not constitute rejection or abandonment. In fact, it can be truly life-enhancing. We have Cassandra on the line. Cassandra, thank you for calling. Welcome to the show. Are you there? While we wait for her to call back, we must have lost her. I'll finish with my story. We have to understand that our loved ones are not here forever, and that oftentimes with their changing needs and their declining abilities, the best way to support them may not be what we had always envisioned or imagined or hoped. Oh, Cassandra's back. Welcome to the show, Cassandra.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Do you have a family situation that you can relate to the story of mine or one of your own that I might be able to help with in some way?
Well, I take care of my grandparents, and they're getting older, and it's just hard for me to do it on my own. So I was thinking of putting them in a nursing home, but I just, you know, with all the news you hear about nursing homes, I'm very hesitant to do it, but I just don't know what else I can do because my job is very time consuming and I can't always be there for them.
You know, that's a great point. I like to say that it's not like it's a good decision or a bad decision in and of itself. What matters is whether or not their needs warrant that living situation. And if in fact they do, you absolutely have to do your own homework. I mean, as is the case with everything, there are some wonderful places and there are some terrible places. But if in fact their need is something more than you can provide due to time constraints or just needing the benefit of a legitimately trained nursing staff member or aide for that matter, then you're not doing anything wrong by not giving them the benefits of this environment. In fact, one could argue the opposite, that if you prevent giving them the benefit of an entire staff of well-trained people to ensure their well-being, despite your good intentions, that might not be their best level of care. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes, it's just that my grandpa has diabetes, so I just worry about him because he needs to be, you know, have full-time care now, and I just want to make sure that, you know, that they're taking care of him and that nothing bad happens to him. Or if something was to happen, they're right there to take care
right.
of it.
Right. So you're saying you have in-home help? Do you have a nurse that's there with him at the house 24/7?
Well, this is recent, so that's why I was also, they just said that the diabetes is getting a little bit worse. So that's why I was thinking of either getting an in-home nurse or maybe putting them in a nursing home. I'm not sure what I should do.
Right.
Because I know my grandmother is also getting older, and I know it's too much for her now. So, you know, I want to relieve some of the stress off of her.
Right. Now, again, I think these are appropriate questions. In fact, I think it's a sign of you being a very responsible person that you're actually considering all of the options. You know, you don't want to be militantly committed to one decision or the other. You really want his condition to determine the intervention. So you had said earlier that, you know, you hear these terrible things on the news and on the radio. You're right. You have to be leery of that and you have to pay attention to that. But surely you know that that's not the whole product, right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
You got to know that there are some good places. All right. So maybe just kind of starting to like educate yourself by going online, maybe speaking to a gerontologist, an elder care doctor in your area, and ask that person where they would have their loved one go if the need were there. Usually they're very happy to help, and it's just a little insight of some information that can start your search. And then if you take a make a t site visit and check these places out, I always tell people look well beyond the brochure because any marketing company can put together a really nice fancy glossy brochure that will not represent well what actually is the care there. But if you show up at times where the administration is there, talk to the administration, and then check out what they say by coming in after hours on the weekends and the evenings. Another really great source of information is talk to the people who live in these facilities. They tend to be very candid. They'll tell you if they're happy there or not.
That's true.
But the other thing
But
that you might
also,
consider, go ahead.
oh no, I was just thinking, do you think that maybe I should try an in-home nurse first and see how that goes, and then maybe like the
You
nursing
know,
home be a second
again,
option?
great question, but it really depends on their level of functioning. Tell me a little bit more about how your grandfather and your grandmother are doing cognitively, physically, emotionally.
Well, my grandfather is worse. His diabetes is not as pretty bad right now. He can't. He has a walker because he had a stroke. So he can't really. He's not very mobile. So, I mean, I wanted him to be comfortable. So I would. I wanted. That's why I was considering maybe having an in-home nurse because at least he's home and he's getting the right care. And my grandmother, she has her own problems. You know, her. She has arthritis, so she just can't be moving around as much as she used to. So, I mean, I wanted to help her out, and but I want them to be comfortable as well.
Of course, of course. So, even just from what you've told me, and I know that this probably doesn't even scratch the surface of the complicated medical conditions that may be present. But with the diabetes and the stroke and the lack of mobility, when a person gets older, they're only one bad fall away from a broken hip. And boy, that can be a game changer. You want to avoid that at all costs. So, if there's financial resources to bring in a live-in nurse, and that person is, you know, an exceptional human being and professional, which sometimes you can find, that might be sufficient, but they'd have to be all in. The other thing I'd strongly recommend that you consider is that there's a middle ground option. It doesn't have to be go straight to nursing home. There are assisted living facilities that are more home-like, where you have your own apartment, your privacy, a kitchenette. And you have the benefit of a support care staff and nurses who are there every day. You might consider that option as well as a, you know, middle ground between the two.
Yes, I actually didn't even think about that. That's great to
Yeah,
hear.
there's three different products. There's besides the in-home health care, there's independent living facilities, assisted living, and nursing care. And so a lot of people use those terms synonymously, but they're really different products. So I think that you have a really good idea right now of kind of exploring all of the options and resources to serve your grandfather and grandmother best. Check those out and give me a call back. Let me know what you find.
Okay, thank you so
All
much.
right, thank you so much. Best of luck to you. Please stay tuned. We have another caller in the next segment, and I've got tips for you. I look forward to sharing these tips and hope they can be very helpful. You're listening to the Dr. Ivan Show. This is Dr. Ivan Wolfson of The Dr. Ivan Show. I am here to help you better manage the needs of your aging parents and help you help yourself in the process. We're talking today about having the courage to discuss difficult issues with your parent when their needs become greater, when they start to decline. It's a very difficult thing to do, but my goodness, think about it. Boy, doesn't it beat the alternative to just kind of engage in wishful thinking and say, well, you know, maybe it's not that bad. I'll put it on for a little while because it's uncomfortable. Or I don't want to upset them, so I'll wait till they bring it up to me. I'm telling you, that might be good intentioned, but it is faulty by design. Because your parent doesn't want to broadcast or highlight or expose themselves in their moment of weakness. They don't want to burden you. So it's really something that I think you have to be proactive with, and it's something that you have to do as a responsible young adult yourself. Now, we have Marie on the line. Marie, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you, Dr. Ivan?
I am great. How are you today?
I'm doing good. I'm calling you back. I called in about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I think, for your last show. I was the one that called about my dad, who is very depressed. I just wanted to do a follow-up call. Say
please
hi.
Do.
How you doing?
Yes, great. So please do maybe give us a brief overview for those who might not have been listening to that show, and then just let me know what has transpired since.
Right. So my dad recently turned 50 years old, and my mom and I have noticed that he's been really depressed about his – he's just very age-conscious, basically. And as he gets older, continues to just kind of get mopier, get less active, and really just try less at life. And the last time I called you, I was telling you how my mom takes a very headstrong approach in approaching him to talking about this, whereas I'm a little bit more gentle with it because I realize it's you know, obviously a big concern of his is aging and getting older. And the advice you gave me last time was to just have a talk with him. And I called him last week with the intention of doing that. We don't live in the same state, so I don't get to see him that often throughout the year. But I gave him a call, and we started talking, but it didn't really transpire into being the topic that I wanted to talk to him about. It kind of skirted around the edge.
Was that because you were a little intimidated by the topic, or was he resistant?
No, I was trying to ease into it, and I think he knew what I was about to talk about, and he just tried changing the subject to something else more lighter and less about him. He, you know, changed the subject to talking about me and how my life is going and what's new with you, blah, blah, blah. So we never really got around to it. I think he was just getting smarter with every time I try to approach the subject, he's, you know, becoming more aware.
Right. So you've had some time to reflect upon that, and I think that was a good initial offering, but tell me what your assessment of that situation was. Why did that not go as perhaps you had hoped?
I think he's just so scared. He's just so scared to talk about it. He's just so scared to do it. And it's not, I really don't think it's me. I've tried thinking, oh, is it just me? Like, am I the one that's scared to bring it up? But I don't think so because, you know, my approach, like I said, compared to my mom's, I'm a little bit more gentle with it, and I think that when he notices that I'm, you know, trying to open up this discussion and try to get into it, he completely avoids it, and I am scared here. I don't have the guts to just be like, Dad, we need to talk about this, you know, and I think that's where I feel, and that's where I feel us, you know, like the parent-daughter relationship, I fail him in not being this, bring it right back to what we were talking about and really just dive into it. Because I'm just scared of him, like, I've never really seen my dad too upset. There have been, like, 2 times, you know, where he's ever cried in front of me or talked about anything super emotional. So I'm just nervous to see him in a state of, like, you know, just being upset and being thrown up about what his situation is. And he's, like I said in the last time we called, he's not unhealthy. He's, you know, for a 50-year-old guy, like, he's pretty healthy. He doesn't have diabetes, he's never had a heart attack or a stroke, he's never been in, like, a situation where we were very concerned for his health. He used to be a smoker, and that's it. So.
But, you know, what also seems to be happening here, and it's a very, very difficult situation, the good news here is that you're in good company because so many people find themselves in the same situation. But to me, it seems clear that what's perhaps a struggle for both of you in different ways, but you're kind of going through the same thing, is that there's a little bit of a changing of the roles, right? I mean, your whole life, I mean, he was the guy in charge. He's your father. He's the one with all the answers. And you now, as a young adult who want to show him the respect that he deserves and afford him the good care that he had afforded you when you were vulnerable and young and a little more kind of needing of assistance, it's a difficult swap to make. I mean, it's not that I'm suggesting that he's not capable in any way, shape, or form, but as you become more experienced in the world and you have more access to information that perhaps he didn't grow up with, for example, like even mental health care, right? You're a little more sophisticated, I would imagine, with identifying that he is in fact depressed. He might kind of downplay that or deny that despite everybody around you seeing it. But you probably know people who've been depressed, and you know people who have sought treatment and benefited greatly from that. That might be a tremendous asset in knowledge that, you know, puts you in a privileged position, because he might not have the same experience. He might not have a pool of people he's, you know, talked to or seen who've gone through this and sought treatment and found that it can be beneficial.
Right. Oh, I see what you're saying completely. I never thought of it that way. I never thought of it like, oh, it's my dad and now I'm the one taking charge. That's an interesting way to look at it.
Right, and the cool thing about this is we're not talking about, like, you becoming controlling or like a tyrant, right? You're not saying, hey, Dad, here's the deal. You're old. I'm in charge, and you're going to do what I say. It's the opposite. It's a very respectful thing, right? Because I think that's what kind of we fear, right? We don't want to upset our parents. We don't want to inadvertently disrespect them or upset them by suggesting that they're no longer as capable as they were. But the point here is that we have multiple resources, and I feel that the richest a person can be is when they're open-minded and utilizing fully all of the available resources around them. When people get, no matter what age they're at, that nobody knows everything, and different people have different life experiences and different mindsets, and if you can pool these resources, boy, you're going to get a much better product. And really, that's all we're talking about here. We're not talking about you taking control as much as you enhancing and you know, improving upon his life situation with the insight that you have and perhaps your availability of resources. So I would suggest, and again, I know it's a whole lot easier said than done, but you have to step away from the implied message. So many times good-intentioned people will kind of make a phone call or show up, and it kind of dance around an issue, right? They'll kind of like put little feelers out there, but they're shocked and surprised when the person they're trying to communicate a certain point to doesn't pick up on that. And I'm telling you, they almost never do, right? Because it's not their agenda. You have to be respectful but direct. You have to say, hey, listen, Dad, I don't mean to offend you. I love you so much, and I know you know that, but I need to have a serious conversation with you. I need you to not kind of derail what I have come here to say. And usually if you start with a preface like that, you set the tone. You let them know it can't be business as usual. And once you can kind of like, I call that verbally contracting. Once you can get a verbal contract to them where he says, okay, honey, I know you're serious here. What do you got on your mind? What do you want to talk about? You can say, well, again, please don't take this the wrong way, but I'm concerned, and I'm not the only one who sees it. You seem like you're not quite yourself these days, and I know you're strong and smart. It's not that you're losing it in any way, shape, or form, Dad, so don't worry about that. It's not my impression. But I do think that you're depressed. Could it be? And then give him an opportunity to kind of, you know, respond to that. And if he says, no, I don't see it, say, well, again, can I, you know, ask you to be open-minded here? Would you like me to share with you what I feel to be indicators of that? And there's no shame in that having been the case. In fact, give him a little research, a little statistics. You know, 80% of the people in this country go through clinical depression at some point in their life. And that's a fact. That's well documented. So if you mention that, you can say, Dad, it's nothing to be ashamed of. In fact, it puts you in good company. But if you can start to more respectfully but directly kind of approach this topic with him and challenge him, you may find that though initially resistant, he could be surprisingly relieved that somebody cared enough to be able to kind of identify this and give him kind of a step up out of that.
Right.
So, again, valiant initial effort. I certainly wouldn't be intimidated. I would ask you to kind of go back with a little more direct kind of but respectful approach and see whether or not that helps you gain some ground. And again, that preface to the conversation is essential. You know, you have to enlist his support, let him know that you want to talk about something important to you and out of concern for him, and you want him not to derail the conversation.
Definitely. I think I was just trying to ease into it too much, and I wasn't being direct enough for sure. And I think especially for the person that he is, he needs someone to...
Right. But you can be direct. You can be direct and respectful at the same time. Thank you so much for the follow-up call. Please call back. Let me know how that goes. Pleasure talking to you again. Please stay tuned. You're listening to the Dr. Ivan Show. Dr. Ivan Wolfson of the Dr. Ivan Show. We're talking today about how you must have the courage to discuss the difficult issues with your parent when their needs can no longer be best met in the preferred environment of your own home, and how choosing residential, independent, assisted living, or nursing facilities when those facilities are needed, when the individual's needs can't be best met at home, does not constitute a rejection or an abandonment. In fact, I know it's hard to believe, if you find the right place and utilize it at the right time, it can be truly life-enhancing. It's not as the stereotype goes where you send a person to die. I've seen many, many, many cases over the years where, in fact, people who are close to death get placed in a wonderful place where their needs are more well met and they thrive. It's a place to live. It's a place that enhances and increases the quality of life for a loved one. So again, that's not always the option. I absolutely am not pushing these places. I'm rather saying be cognizant, beware, be informed, so that when in fact that's needed, you don't neglect making that move based on preconceived notions. So I was talking earlier in the segment about having visited my uncle who had declined substantially and having been so pleasantly surprised that he rallied for this visit. And I was reminded in this visit that people often have the ability to be tremendously resilient. In fact, both my uncle and aunt had demonstrated this in so many ways during my short visit over the weekend. But it is also important to accurately assess the true needs of your loved ones and be willing to have the difficult conversations that are necessary in discussing the best care options, even when a person that you're visiting, or your parent in this case, is putting their best foot forward, putting everything they have and kind of presenting themselves in the most positive light, you have to be realistic. You have to be realistic with what the lion's share of their ability is and how that's demonstrated over the days on a day-to-day basis. And even though in assessing this, if you are in a life situation where you view your loved one, your parent, as declining, you have to have the responsible conversation about how their needs can be best met. Now, in my aunt and uncle's case, their townhouse had no longer been conducive to meeting their needs. My aunt had to resort to curling up and sleeping on the love seat, which was in the adjacent living room, in order to be immediately available to her husband, who might get up in the middle of the night. He was a very stubborn man, and he was just did what he wanted to do. And he would have climbed that steep staircase and been tremendously at risk of falling if she wasn't there to intervene, which she did on a regular basis. Because he just wanted to go upstairs to the bedroom, which he was not capable of going to. So fast forwarding to the present, my cousin and aunt found a wonderful facility for Michael to move into, which offered him top-rate nursing care, assistance with activities of daily living, and socialization. I mean, you tend not to think about this, but when a person is declining and they're in their own home and they can't come and go as they please, they're basically, in a way, kind of imprisoned to this environment. And as nice as the home may be, if you're not able to get up and out, you're stuck. And I don't know about you, but I find that when a person's in that condition, a lot of good intentioned, loving people, they don't come by, not because they don't care, but it's just downright depressing. People don't want to see their loved one in this state. So despite my aunt and her daughter having been fearful of this move, feeling like an abandonment to my uncle, he actually rather enjoyed living there. In this fresh new environment, my uncle experienced an undeniable increase in his quality of life for the final months of his life. It also afforded my aunt the opportunity to take better care of herself, as well as focusing more fully on being his wife again, as opposed to his caregiver. Additionally, they had very little money and admittedly thought that they could never even consider moving him to such a high-end facility due to the expected expenses of such treatment. Well, that too was something that they were pleasantly surprised with, because they later learned in exploring these options and investigating each different place and what programs they had in place, they learned that it was far more reasonable than they could have ever imagined. Due to him having been a military veteran and many of the costs having been reduced or covered as a result of his military service, it really was the best option for him. And if there were any regret, honestly, it might have been that they suffered in the home situation far longer than they needed to. Boy, isn't that shocking to think that not only is a care facility not a bad option, it might be a better option than the present one. Now that he's passed, the family naturally misses him. We miss him a great deal. We are, however, all tremendously comforted by knowing how much support he had experienced throughout his process of decline and how peacefully he passed when it was his time. Since then, my aunt has now moved back to this state to live near her son in her own condo, 2 blocks away from him. She's becoming stronger physically and emotionally with each passing day. I'm telling you, though nothing will replace my uncle, we'll miss him for the rest of our years. We are glad that this thing ended up getting resolved as it had before it was too late, so he didn't die tragically of a fall in his own home. There was no traumatic brain injury. There was no broken hip. Or worse, he didn't fall back on my aunt, which was something that I had fearful fantasies about happening in that environment, as she was trying to support him in going upstairs. All of that tragedy was avoided because they did the responsible thing of accurately assessing his well-being, his level of need, and intervening despite the difficulties in doing so. I'm telling you, it's not an easy decision, and it's not a one-size-fits-all scenario. But do yourself and your loved one a favor by educating yourself, becoming aware of all the options, and it all starts with becoming accurately aware of what your parent or loved one's true ability is versus your desired way of viewing the situation. It's wishful thinking, I'm telling you, and we all engage in it, but it's counterproductive. I thank you so much for tuning in. I'll be back next on Monday, April 11th at 11 a.m. Until then, please take care of yourself, take care of your parents, and be well, because you have just this one life to live, and to live it the best, most responsible way you can, and to help support your loved ones in doing so as well. Thank you so much. We'll see you again. Talk to you in 2 weeks. You've been listening to the Dr. Ivan Show.
Opinions you hear on Lifestyle Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Lifestyle Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Lifestyle Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or service. If you have any questions about Lifestyle Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at lifestyletalkradio.com.